Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.
Hey, what's going on, No Bad Dog Army? This is an amazing podcast. I am very excited to put something, you know, just like when we film, we get these really gold nuggets in where we're like, wow, it's good content because it's going to teach you guys a lot. And this is one of those episodes with a dog owner who loves her dog, but given the circumstances, the dog is basically looking like an a-hole because he's just in a bad environment. And so we go through a lot of different stuff in this. It's a reactive shepherd that's on a back tie living in an Amish community with an individual that can't put the dog in the house and they have to live in the washroom and there's a disability involved. There's just so much. And so there's a lot of lessons, a lot of nuggets in here that I know you guys are going to pull from. So I hope that this helps. Just remember, you guys, my UK dates for this year, 2022, me going over to the UK are now available. Link in the description below. I'm going to be heading over to the UK at the end of September, putting on a clinic like we did last year. It was a very magical, very fun thing. Such a big progress, such a big push for the balanced dog training community in the UK. And I was lucky enough to help kind of connect the dots of these people that are kind of like, you know, in their own thing, like doing their own thing. And now I'm seeing such a flourishing community going on over there, not just because of me, but it's cool to see all the people that came to my seminar that are all networking and meeting and talking, and it's really lovely. So anyway, I'm excited for it. I can't wait to meet you guys. There's audit spots and working spots available. And of course, we released our remote collar course, which we're getting a lot of great feedback on. And if you guys want to purchase that, it's in the link description below as well. I hope you guys are well. Make sure you listen to the end because I'm going to be answering your dog training questions. Let's get into it.
We do have a Hermspringer 2.25, and that has taken care of our issue with leash pulling. And we also have a remote collar that has helped. He's a 2-year-old male German Shepherd, and we're having really severe problems with his very reactive to bicycles. Where we live in an Amish community where there's a lot of bicycle riding back and forth. We have worked with him. He's not reactive to trucks anymore or motorcycles anymore, but just bicycles for some reason. And he goes crazy, running in circles. Unfortunately, the landlords we have right now do not want him in the apartment that we rent. So he is on a chain when he's outside. We're with him all day long, and we exercise him several times a day.
Okay.
Plus, we also take walks. So I have planned it for a young man to come by on his bicycle so you can see exactly what he's doing. I can't get this to stop with the remote shock collar. But then what happens is that he never barks at all anymore. And when he doesn't bark, you know, that I want to find the balance between, I want him to still bark and notify us that somebody's coming, yet not get so wound up. He actually got loose 2 weeks ago. This is what prompted the appointment. And he ran after, it was our landlord. They are Amish and they ride bicycles. A horse and buggy too, but bicycles. And he ran after one of them, and the landlord, when he stopped the bike, he tried to, when he was trying to get off of it to put the bike between him and Ruger, our dog. Oh, he's already back. Okay, so that's not going to work. Anyway, you've seen it a million times. I watch your videos a lot, you know, jumping up and down, running in circles. He's broken several collars. He's extremely powerful, as you are probably already know. He's 89 pounds. He's an intact male German Shepherd. I have my glasses off. Can't see too good. Okay. And then I think I've got it now, honey. So he grabbed his pant legs and he bit, it has bite marks in it. I'm very concerned about this because, they could call the authorities and cause all kinds of problems for me because of this. So this is the main issue I'm having is where do I find, you know, do I continue to just zap him when he acts like that? But then he will no longer bark at all if I do that.
Okay. So, you know, when you're doing remote collar training, it takes quite a bit of time to introduce the remote collar properly. And it takes quite a bit of foundation work before you ever use the collar as a correction using any stimulation. So it's not, you can't just put it on them and then correct them. That doesn't work. That's going to make things worse.
Sorry. We've done that a couple of years ago. Sorry for interrupting you.
That's okay.
But yeah, we have gone through a lot of the training on the e-collar and how to use it properly. We don't use your e-collar because I'm very low income. I'm on disability. So, but I did get one off of Amazon and it does work. It's called Dog Care. And just so you'll know that I've done everything that I know to do to introduce him. And we have been working with him and the collar for about a year now.
Okay. So, okay. Let's back up a little bit. So you're right now, I don't have any videos from you, but I can try to find them in a minute. Right now, when you're, what is your biggest problem right now? So when he, it just sounds like out of all of those problems, there's something going on your end. You're doing something, you've got to be doing something terribly wrong with all of those things that are happening with like breaking collars, running after people on bikes, ripping pant legs, not listening, all of those things. Whenever I hear these huge accumulation of things, it's always almost every time a gigantic accumulation of a dog owner doing something that is not even in the same wheelhouse. So let's go over when he's reacting to people on bikes. That sounds like your biggest problem, right?
Yes. And it happens when I'm not with him. When he's on, whenever he's outside, he has to be on a chain because of the landlords. That's otherwise I have to get rid of him.
Okay.
So they're allowed to keep him, but he has to be on a chain. They're also deathly afraid of him because he's a German Shepherd.
Okay.
They don't like dogs. They're scared of dogs. So occasionally he gets loose. He has broken the buckle. I've spent so much money on collars, Tom. Nylon collars, leather collars. We've shored him up.
Okay. So if what do you have to leave him outside? Can you leave him inside?
I can leave him in a washroom, which is a little bit distant from the house, the way the house is laid out. I can get to him quickly within 3 seconds. We have it all set up so I can get to him quick, but he's not allowed in the actual living part of the house, like the living room, the dining room, the kitchen. I wish he could be. I would love to have him in my bedroom with me every night, but he's not allowed. But they have, with a lot of arguing and requesting and promises, they've said, okay, he could be in the washroom. So I could take you if you want to see him.
No, I don't need to see him. I just think that you're going to have to really get things under control because it sounds like a lose-lose for the dog because he can't go inside and he can't behave outside. That's what it sounds like. So I just think like if he's this reactive, you're going to have to spend quite a bit of time to really manage this situation. Are you home most of the day?
I am. And the way we managed and got him used to trucks was I would take him to a park. And it used to be he had to stay in the car, but slowly with giving him positive reinforcement, lots of treats to desensitize him, I was able to desensitize him to motorcycles, bikes. I'm sorry, not bikes, cars, trucks, but bicycles and also children. I'm really nervous because he'll look at a child that's playing on a playground, and he's very unpredictable. Sometimes he'll be fine. Other times, after he looks at that child and they make eye contact, he'll start to run after them. And that's when I will give him a little zap.
When you say that he runs after these children, what do you mean? Like, are they in your backyard with him?
Oh, we go to a park. We would go to a community. Street. That's where I walk him and exercise him a lot with frisbee throwing and things like that when no one's around. He does listen well to me. I do have good recall on him. And I thought we had a pretty good relationship. Obviously, it's not as good as it could be. I can't spend copious amounts of time with him because of usually it's my health. I know that we don't have history talking with history. You don't really know what all I've done. So I'm trying to quick give you a glimpse of what I've been working on with him. But for some reason, for the bicycles, okay, hold the bike right now. Oh, boy. I don't know if you can see that. Can you see that?
No, I gotta go down. There, okay. That's good. Yeah. So that's just a situation that's going to make most dogs frustrated. And that's what you're dealing with is you're dealing with frustration and you're dealing with a dog that's on a tie back and he's seen a bunch of people go by him and it's making him very frustrated. And so he's probably always going to do that unless you change his environment and how he lives. Because you can't control the environment that's going on around you, and he doesn't have enough balance in his life to be successful the way he needs to, because he needs balance, and right now he doesn't have balance. So he's getting put outside, and when he's reacting, he doesn't have any. It's just making it worse because he has to be on a long line. It's making it worse. You see what I'm saying? Like, he's on a long line, so he's out, and when a bicyclist goes by or something goes by, that's what is the long line is what's frustrating him the most. It's making it worse. That's why when he does get off of that thing, he goes and he just explodes all of this energy on whatever he's barking at. So you're going to have to really spend a good amount of time with handling him outside and working on him being calm and working on him being relaxed with you when you're handling him. Because I've never heard all the stuff that you've said. It's the amount of stuff that you've said that he's done tells me that there's something going on with your relationship with him, because I've never heard of that. I've been doing this a long time, and I've never heard of all of those things happening to one particular dog, breaking multiple leashes, breaking multiple long lines. That stuff is like, there's a lot of human error got to be going on with that, because I've never heard of all of that stuff happening to one dog. Do you see what I'm saying? So it's like, it feels like something's happening where whatever his environment is and whoever situations he's in, he's being put in these situations and these environments, because all of the stuff you've told me so far, I don't think I've ever heard happening to one particular dog. It's like, okay, there's something going on there. So it just seems to me like he needs more attention. And he needs more mental stimulation. So if you can't, and that's why it's hard, because, and from what you've told me, correct me if I'm wrong, from what you've told me is he has to be on the long line essentially, and he can't be off because he doesn't listen off leash. He can't be inside because your landlords won't let him inside, and you don't have good enough health to spend time with him training. Is that correct?
I can spend some training usually in the evenings and at nighttime. I do take him for walks around where we live in the evening with the Hermspringer. The Hermspringer has made it very easy for me to walk him. Before, we had the gentle leader, mm-hmm. and it was a constant tugging, and he's powerful. Mm-hmm. And he knocked me down once, and I fractured my elbow when he knocked me down. And that was a year ago, last January. He no longer jumps. So he is getting better through all these little things. I see all the tiny steps. But at this point, I feel like I'm trying to save his life, because the ladies are saying, you know, now I'm out quite a bit with him. Because right where he is tied is our wash line. So I'm out there quite a bit with him throughout the day. And he also, we do take him off the leash and exercise him with frisbee throwing 2-3 times a day. I walk him about a mile a day. And then we also, 2-3 times a week, take him to a local park where there's children and very busy skateboarders. And it's a dog-friendly park. Mm-hmm. But he does fine. After we've been there a little while, he like calms down and will sit down on a bench. But if anyone comes very close to us, he becomes reactive. He's never bit anyone yet. But he doesn't want people to come real close to him. He doesn't want people coming close to myself. And I'm okay with that kind of, Tom, because I do want him to protect me. And so I don't know where the line is between having your dog not be reactive to people, but
yeah.
So, and the same thing with the barking. I could use the remote collar and make him never bark again, which I think would be cruel and abuse. But yet, see, I want him to bark when a biker comes by, say, hey, somebody's coming on a bike. But yet I don't want him to act like that, because it's not good for him.
Yeah. So you don't have the, you don't have the amount of control with him to make that decision though. That's the thing. Like when he's barking on the long line like that and he's freaking out at a dog and you want him to do that, you don't have nearly enough control to be able to stop it right when it's happening. That's the.
Actually, I do sometimes. I use a hamburger treats, raw hamburger, because of you. He's on a raw diet now, and I have extra hamburger or venison, and he has a favorite toy. It's called his little red thing, and so if I say go get your red toy, if I'm right there, he doesn't react to the bicycles. It's when I'm not there, so I try as much as I can. As soon as I hear him bark, I try to get right out there as fast as I can. And then I'll say, thank you, good boy. And then I'll give him the quiet command. Most of the time he listens. And when I say good boy.
Okay. So I guess I'm just trying to figure out what's the problem then. I'm having a hard time seeing the problem here.
The intensity of his reactiveness. Him chasing a biker down and bites the pant leg. It could have been the leg.
Right, but that's exactly what I'm saying though, is you don't have that control. That's exactly what I'm saying, is you don't have the control that if this dog is off leash or this dog is on leash or this, you're inside and he's barking outside, you don't have that control to make those decisions. So if you ground up some hamburger and go out and hush him and stuff him as he's barking in between eating patterns, that's not control. That's what I'm saying is when he starts to bark and you go out the window and you say, leave it, he should stop. Or if he gets off the leash and he sees a biker and he runs, he should stop. You don't have that control. That's what I'm saying, is I don't think it's fair or realistic for you to say, hey, I only want you to bark when it's convenient and when I want you to. You don't have the control to turn that lever on and off right now, I don't think.
Right, I don't.
So I think for him, he's getting confused, because if he's barking at a child on a bike or he's barking at somebody, a neighbor on a bike, and you're going out there and you're heavily paying him with hamburgers and treats and all these things, and then he stops, you're paying him for barking, and then you're coming inside and then you don't want him to bark. So like I said before, like if you had this crazy obedience with him and you could really just turn it on and off at any given time, I don't think that that would be unrealistic. But right now you don't have the control and obedience to have that on and off switch.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I understand what you're saying, where like you do have that control, but somebody who's zooming all the way out in your relationship, you don't, because it's like, let's play back a little bit. So it's, I only want him to bark when I think it's appropriate for him to bark. And then I say, well, I don't think you really have the amount of control that you need to be making those decisions for him. And then you say, well, I do, because if I go in and I get out raw hamburger and I go out there and I pay him as he's barking, he knows that it's okay for him to bark during that time. And then when I say quiet or hush, he sometimes stops. That's not control. That's just getting lucky. Maybe when you go out there at the right time, he might stop. But I want you to be able to turn around in your chair and say, Ruger, leave it. Boom. And he stops. Or if he gets unclipped out of that thing that he's on and he's running after somebody, you say, Ruger, come, and he does it. That's what I'm saying is your expectations of control isn't realistic right now at this point in your relationship.
Okay. Yeah. The barking doesn't bother me as much as his actions. You know, running after a biker, that's biting humans is not acceptable.
Right. But I also think, like, judging by this situation and myself being an experienced, you know, dog control officer and looking at the environments that he's living in, it's also not fair for him not to get frustrated when these things are happening, because he's on a tie back that's 8 feet long and he sees somebody and he's coming up, bark, 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 dropping down, coming up, bark, 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 dropping down. So he's also been put into this like zoo like atmosphere where people are basically running by him and teasing him. And then when he gets off that leash, he goes and he doesn't attack anybody, but he might bite somebody. Like, you got to understand that the decision to bite that dude's pant legs is a decision. He could go up and bite that guy's ankle and break it in 2 seconds, but he didn't. He's just like, hey, you guys are moving. I'm back here doing nothing. And all day long, I see y'all out here going back and forth. And when I'm finally out of this harness or this setup that I'm on, this boing, boing, boing system that we're in, I'm going to go and I'm going to chase you, and I'm not going to attack you. I don't want to hurt you. I don't want to it's not an emotional thing. And that's what I think is happening is he's in an unrealistic environment to be safe and to be successful. Because what I'm hearing from you is like, it's life or death. But if I had that dog within 48 hours, I'd be able to bring him anywhere I wanted to without any problems. And so I think just because of the situation that he's in, I don't think you should even be having the conversation of life or death with this dog before you should be having this conversation of getting a new home for the dog. Because right now I don't see, you know, no bad dogs, right? I don't see a dog that you would even like right now, judging by everything that you just told me, and you even bring up the conversation of like, I don't want him to be put down, or I don't want him. He's being set up in a really unfortunate situation because he can't get out of the situation he's in. He's a frustrated, intact, young German Shepherd that's on an 8-foot tie back that's watching bikes go back and forth all day long. And he needs more control than that. He can't just, it's just like leaving him out there to see what, it's just like, it's not going to be fair for him. And I'm not blaming you, and I'm not saying it's your fault, because I know that the circumstances right now are just unfortunate for you because you can't bring him inside. I'm just kind of laying out what I'm seeing. And so I just want to bring that up into conversation, because I don't want you to think that you would have to put him down or get rid of him because of these situations. Because like I said before I even saw him reacting, or before you told me what type of training you've done, considering everything you dumped on me in the very beginning, I straight up told you, like, the amount of things that have happened with this dog so far in his life of only being 1 year old, there's got to be something terribly going wrong with management here, because that's a lot of stuff to happen that quick.
Okay. He is 2.5, but 2.5. Still, even 2.5.
Oh yeah. I wrote that down. Sorry.
That's okay. So, so we are looking for another place, just so you know. We have, this is his second place. I've had him since he was 10 weeks old, but this is the second move we've had. Hmm. These places on Brentine, although he is an emotional support animal, the landlords are still not allowing him inside the homes. I don't understand why. He's not destructive. And I guess I was hoping you could give me like steps to work on, because I have been able to desensitize him. It was hard work, Tom, as I said, to trucks, to horses, to buggies, because he used to be reactive to all of those things also. And now he's not. So that I said, well, why? What is it about the bicycle? For some reason, we just can't get on top of it. And now the landlords are threatening. The landlord said to me when he brought over his pant leg to show me that he bit his pant leg. he said that he wanted to know how much liability insurance I have on the dog. Mm-hmm. And so then I asked him if he'd be willing to work with me. There's no men here. And he does have a little bit of a thing with men. And I could tell you a quick story about something that happened a year ago. And I think that's why. But so he was working with me. I gave him some cut up pieces of hot dogs. And he was throwing the hot dogs to Ruger. And I would ask him to come just one step closer. But Ruger was on the chain still, so he couldn't act. Him. We were doing that. And then for some reason, I don't know why the landlord did this, he reached his hand out to pet Ruger. Ruger did not bite him, but he barked. He gave that real intense, sure. You're in my space, get away from me, dude, type of bark. And then he started, the landlord thought that funny. I didn't think it was very funny. A year ago, we were gone. But we were gone to church. When we came back, something had happened. Somebody or a group of youth got into the washroom where he is because he somehow broke out of his crate. He's a very strong crate. He broke out the bottom of the crate. The washroom was an absolute mess. He was extremely out of breath. He was freaked out. The landlord said they didn't hear anything, but they had a lot of people over, a lot of kids over from their church, their Amish church. The children just run all over the place. I did set boundaries with them that we're renting this side of the house. It's a duplex. So we're renting one side of the duplex. The landlords are on the other side. We have a small piece of yard. And I had told them that, you know, you've got to keep your people out of this side of the house. It's not fair to my dog or us. They deny anybody came in. I didn't have a camera set up at that time, so I couldn't see what went on. But something happened. And ever since then, he has not liked men. And they also stole some adult beverages from our refrigerator. So I think it was youth that came in. Mm-hmm. We have a refrigerator in that room, overflow fridge. And we noticed a couple of adult beverages were missing. So ever since then, we've had an issue with him. So I confronted some of the youth, and they all denied coming in or bothering him at all. But he hasn't been quite the same towards men since then, or children. Mm-hmm. Now, I have three grandchildren, and they're terrified of him. If I'm holding one of my grandchildren, I have an eight-month-old. That's the youngest grandchild. I have a three-year-old and a six-year-old. If I'm holding the eight-month-old in my arms and she makes eye contact with him, he'll bark very aggressively at her, and then she cries. The toddler can throw hot dogs to him, and so can the six-year-old, but they just can't get real close to him. He has like a boundary line he'll allow people, which is about 3 feet from him. If they get any closer. So, okay. So you're basically saying it's a hopeless situation unless I change the environment?
No, I don't think that. I'm just saying right now, I don't think that you're in a position to have some of the expectations that you have of, I want him to bark when I think he should bark, but I want him to understand when I don't want him to bark, because like I said, I just don't think that you have that control.
Like, stay quiet. I want him to be quiet. He normally does. Yeah.
Okay. So let's back up a little bit. What is your biggest problem? Let's start there.
Racing, jumping, freaking out when a bicycle comes by.
Okay. So if you go out and you put him on the prong collar and a leash and you correct him, how does he react?
I've never done that.
Okay. So let's start correcting him for the behavior that we don't like, that we don't want to see. And so making sure that your prong collar placement is right where it needs to be, right behind his ears. And you have at least, I would say a 4 foot leash would be good. 6 feet be a little long, but making sure that you correct him when he does this. So if you can spend time with him outside, like you said that you can, which is great. You can go out, put his stuff on, and you know when it's going to be a busier time or when it's not. And you have to just go out and start correcting him for this behavior when he does it. And you might have to sit down on the porch with him for a little bit until you get a good rep in, a couple reps in. Go out there and stand or whatever you need to do. But you have to be able to make it clear to him that the barking and lunging and the reactions or the behavior that he's exhibiting is inappropriate, and you don't want it. And you have to make sure that you're marking it with your voice. So you're saying leave it and you're correcting. That's the first step you have to do. But he's not ever just gonna click and go, oh, wait a minute, like I don't know what this is. He's not just gonna do that. So that's what I would do, is be a little bit more assertive with the situation and get his equipment on, go out there and hang out, because right now he's not getting punished for the behavior that you don't like, or the behavior that's not even that you don't like. I would agree that the behavior is unacceptable and it's going to make everything more stressful.
How do you separate the behavior, like the part of the behavior of the jumping and acting crazy, separate that from the barking? Because I'm barking, but not the behavior.
Well, it's the same thing. Like you have to be very assertive with what you don't want. So if he's jumping, you're correcting the jumping. And you know, if you want him, if you don't care that he barks, then, but that's what I'm saying is you don't have enough control to distinguish those differences, because if he's getting to a point where he's going to bark outside by himself, tethered up to a pole, he's going to jump. It would be very weird and odd to see a dog sitting calmly and barking at somebody at the same time. That doesn't happen. They jump, they bark, they spin, they react, they're pissed off, they're frustrated. But that's what I'm saying is right from the beginning of this conversation, there's not realistic expectations here of what's going on. That's why it's been such a frustrating thing probably for you, is because you don't have that competitive control that you've been working with this dog that much, to have that control to say, I'm okay with you doing this, but I'm not okay with you doing this, because he's tethered up on a pole outside and there's things that he doesn't like going constantly back and forth all day. And there's no accountability for his actions, so he's never going to change. It's just that's what I'm saying is it's just going to make it worse.
Okay, so let me ask you this, Tom, because I don't think he will be reactive like that if I'm with him. It usually only happens when I'm not with him, when I'm inside washing dishes or whatever. Okay. So that's why I get to him as fast as I can.
So when you're out, so this is the important piece that you might be not doing, is you have to make sure that you're marking this behavior with whatever you want it to be. So it's leave it or off or down or whatever. But you have to, like, if you're out with him and he does all the things that you don't want him to do, he's jumping, barking, whatever he does, then you would correct him and tell him to leave it. And you'd have to punish him somehow by doing that. And then that way, when you're inside and you say leave it or whatever you decide to use, it should be transferable. But if he's not reacting, it would be hard for me to believe, considering how reactive that he just was on that leash, that if you walked outside, he would just lay down and be calm.
What he does, let me try. I wish I could videotape this. But what he does is that I'll say, Ruger, I'll say, good boy, thank you for the alert. And I'll say, come. And then he'll run to me. And then he will turn right around, though, and run back towards the bike. And then I'll say, Ruger, come. And he'll run back to me. And I'll say, stay. Or I'll say, down, to try to divert him. I'll touch with my hands, mm-hmm. all of that. And then but I'll say, stay. Sometimes he won't do he won't continue to stay. He'll get down, but then he'll stay for 2 seconds, and then he'll go back.
Yeah, that's you don't want to do that, because you're rewarding him for barking, and then you're also asking him to do a behavior he doesn't know well enough in that context to do. Like boom, boom, win, lose, like every time. Like when you go outside and he's barking, you go, good boy, thanks for letting me know. Boom, he doesn't care that you just that you're going to decide when it's okay and when it's not. You just went out and you paid him for barking, right? So there's step one. And then when he comes back, and if you say come, if he does come, it's 60%, 50%, whatever. He comes back and then you ask him to down, maybe he will, maybe he won't. You ask him to sit, maybe he will, maybe he won't. There's no accountability. There just has to be more structure there. That's what I'm, that this is what I'm saying. These are the problems, because that's what's going to set you up for failure the most, is you have to, he's not at, you don't have that obedience to ask him to do those things.
What do I do?
Well, you, what I would do is I would get him on a long line. I would get him on his prong collar, and I would spend some time with him outside, and I would be working on the things that you want him to do to counter this reactivity. So again, if your down isn't good, don't ask him to down outside or off leash, because it's a lose-lose. Because you're saying, hey, I want you to do something. He's saying, I'm not going to do it. And then he walks away. But you have to understand that the reason that he's reactive in the first place is not only from the frustration because of the environment that he's in, but he also doesn't have anybody telling him what he can and can't do, because he's not taking anybody serious in his life, because you, there's no accountability. So if you say Ruger come and he says no, and you say, okay, come again, Ruger come, and he's like no, and then he finally comes, you say Ruger down, and he may down for 2 seconds and walks away, that's one of the main reasons he's probably continuing to bark, is because he doesn't have any structure. He's got nothing, he's, nobody's in charge here. He's confused, he's frustrated, but you got to get him back on the leash and work with him, and but don't ask him to do the things that he's not good at, because that's going to take your relationship backwards.
That makes a lot of sense. He's like two different dogs, Tom. He'll be obedient when it's when I'm in the washroom with him, and it's just him and I, and I'm just working with him, playing with him. He will be very obedient on stay, down, all that. But it's when there's a distraction.
Right.
Is when
but that's, yeah, and that's common for most people with any dog, but that's the difference between basic obedience and advanced obedience. But that's the point, is you're taking very basic obedience and you're trying to apply it in a situation that is advanced. So okay. There's levels to obedience. There's levels to control. That's the first thing I said to you, is you don't have the control to have the realistic expectations that you want with him. And it's, okay. And I'm still kind of hanging on that, because that's what I'm hearing and seeing. Because if you're inside of a washroom and you're got some food and you're like, sit down, stay, heal, and he does it, great. But there's a big difference between your dog doing that in a clinical environment with absolutely no distractions, with a currency in your hand, versus you doing it outside with all this stuff going on. There's a, it's the difference between riding your bicycle for the first time and then entering the Tour de France. There's years and years and years, you know, that go involved with training the dog to get to that point. And that's what I'm saying is you're like, I want him to do, I want him to bark, but only when I allow him to bark. And then I want him to come, and I want him to down, I want him to stay, but he doesn't, your first thing you said, he doesn't have. So you're predicating all of your success off of a veneer of obedience, because if he's out and he's barking and he's distracted and you say, Ruger, come, he's not going to come. Boom. That's it. We don't continue training from there. That if you can't get your dog to do it, like, he's in an environment that you have no control with him in. Do you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't have the advanced obedience to control him in the environment that he's in 90% of the time. So what you have to do is you have to go back down to the basics. And if you in your head say, well, I'm just going to recall him to me and I'm going to put him in a down stay when he starts to bark. That's great. That's a first step. But you know, and I know, and he knows that you don't have the obedience to do that yet if there's a distraction. So that's where you have to start, is go back down to that obedience. That's where you're frustrated the most. And that's why you're having so many problems and problems and problems and problems, is because you're doing the same thing over and over again, expecting something else to happen. And it's not going to.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? So if I came over to your house right now and he's barking at me and I said, call him over to you. Oh, he's not going to come. He's too distracted. Next. Then we can't even, you see what I'm saying? So like the behavior of the dog And the problems that you're having with the dog is the external problem that you want to end because your landlord gets upset, right? You're like, this has got to stop. But the reality is everything that leads up to your dog actually reacting, you have no control over. So you can't work on that far off behavioral problem that you're having because your foundation doesn't exist.
Okay. So what steps do I take to do? So I'll do
get a long get yourself a long line, even the one he has on. But you have to think in your head, okay, when Ruger barks, it sounds like you have the big problem is going to be when Ruger barks when you're not inside or when you're not outside. So you have to think in your head, what are you going to do to get him to not do that? But so the first thing you need to do is you need to start putting him back. You need to put him back on the leash. Like if I had Lakota, my personal dog, who's been trained since she was 6 weeks, I could bring her into environments and ask her to do stuff and she'll do it day in and day out without any equipment on because her obedience has been proofed. It's been tested. She's been doing it for a long time, yada, yada, yada. Right. And I'm not comparing the two, but what I'm saying is right now you have to think of a scenario of like, okay, if Lakota was barking habitually, hysterically at something, right? Whatever it is, my obedience, and it doesn't matter why it's happening to me at this point. It's like, okay, she's barking at the squirrels, the birds, the person on the bike, the Amish and the, whatever it is. My obedience is good enough where I can say, Lakota, either come, Lakota down, Lakota leave it, or Lakota go to your bed or whatever. I would be able to manually control her no matter what she wants to do, right? So that's what I'm saying is you have to think about, okay, well, when Ruger's barking, I just want him to stop. I want him to hush up. Okay, I get that. But you need this. The obedience is like your school. So your school is your learning and your education. And the more you work with your dog, the more communication you have, the more education you have between each other, the more you know, the more you're like, okay, you know what this is, 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 you know what this is. And then when you get into a situation, you'll be able to pull all those things out of your back pocket and say, okay, you're barking, come. Okay, whatever it is, you have to be able to counter with. So get yourself a long line and ask yourself, when he's barking, this is what I want him to do. I want him to come, I want him to down, and I want him to stay. And that's just the most basic thing that you could ask any dog to do under any context, whether they're barking or they're wagging their tail or they're licking kids' faces. You got to have come here when I say, lay down when I say, and stay there when I stay. And all of those things are very basic, but in your context, it's not basic. It's advanced obedience because I want you to recall off of the thing that you don't like the most of the bicycles, right? I want you to down, which is something that you may or may not do without whatever. And I want you to stay. Those three things are something that he's not really that great at right now. So that's what you have to do. Work on your recall, your down, and your stay. But the other thing that you can do, to be honest, that I think would be just as beneficial in conjunction with all of that stuff is use your conditioning to teach him what's wrong. So if he's out there and he's barking, and again, like, you know, the busier times, you know, your capacity, if you want to go out there and hang out there for an hour or whatever, and there's people walking by and he's off of his tie back there. He's on his long line with his prong collar and his safety clip to his flat collar. And he starts to bark and you'd say, Ruger, leave it. And then if he continues to bark, you would correct him and let him know, hey, that is inappropriate. That behavior that you're exhibiting right now on this very moment is not appropriate. And you're going to tie it in with your verbal, leave it. So it means something. So it's not just, I can't bark maybe when mom's around or whatever it is, right? You have to make sure that when you say something out of your mouth, you say, Ruger, leave it. It's accountable. It's, you know, you're following through with this stuff. You really have to make sure that he understands that you mean it, and you have, you know, you have something that's going to reinforce it. That's the very first step that I would be doing, because right now, if he's barking and you go out there and you holler at him and he just looks at you like, what are you going to do? That's the reason why he's, you know, the solution of why he's barking is also the cause of why he's barking, because the lack thereof.
Okay. All right. I will work on that. I have a couple other questions that I think that my daughter might have for you. I don't know if you do or not, Hannah. Is it okay, is it safe and fair to walk him a mile once or twice a day with the Hermspringer on, or is that too much?
No, you can totally do that. And I would encourage you, because of the circumstances, to exercise this dog as much as you can. The Hermspringer is just a communicative tool that helps you power steer through and navigate. It's a reinforcement, right? So it helps you enforce things, and it also can help you really teach the dog what you want to do. But again, like, the prong collar is your communication, okay? But what you really want him to do is, especially when you're on a walk, it's going to be heel and it's going to be break. Those are the only two things that you're doing. So when you have any type of tool, the prong collar or whatever you're using, that just helps you hold the dog accountable if they decide not to listen. But let's go way back to the foundation. His heel has to be good enough to ask the dog to do in those environments. And that's where a lot of people make these mistakes, is we have a question of, can the dog wear a prong collar for 2 miles? Sure, that doesn't matter. But the real question is what is your dog doing on that 2 mile walk? You know, how much engagement, how much are they listening? So the answer is yes, they can do that. But I mean, you can wear it. That's fine.
Okay. I only walk him at night when there's no one around. I mean, there's wild animals. He did get in a fight with a skunk once.
Fun.
Yeah. That still smells. But, as far as there's no people, they all go to bed at 9 o'clock. So mm-hmm. I walk up at midnight, it's dark, but, and I do that to just work on my relationship with him and my communication with him. And then I periodically stop and let him have a break, you know, let him smell around, sniff around. I have a 6-foot lead, a leash attached to the, Hermspringer. And then after, I'll give him 2-3 minutes, smell around. But I am a little nervous because he's very powerful and he could use me as a sled, make me a sled if he wanted to. But the Hermspringer has given me the confidence that I've needed to be able to do this. Even with the gentle leader, I did not have the control I needed to take him on walks. So I haven't tried yet to take him anywhere where there would be a lot of people. I did. I did take him to a farmer's market once. I did put a muzzle on him just to make sure, but he's never bitten anyone. Mm-hmm. You know, kids run up to you and things like that. So I didn't know what he would do. Mm-hmm. So as ability protector, but I did take him and he did really well. He stayed by me. He sat by me. He wasn't trying to get away from me. And I did have treats. So I would occasionally pay him for his obedience. Other than that, I have not been taking him into areas where there are people because I don't want to frustrate him. Mm-hmm. And more of him than what's reasonable. So that was a question. And then also, I know this is down the road for me, but how do you or do you ever wean your dog off of their Hermspringer where they could just, well, I know they could heel off leash, but how do you start to wean him off the Hermspringer?
Yeah, so it those two kind of topics go together. And again, it comes back down to the prong collar is your enforcement behind your verbal. So if you say heel and the dog doesn't heel, that would be your ability to hold the dog accountable to teach them, hey, you gotta, especially if they're, like you said, like they're sledding you around and it's dangerous. And that's why this equipment is made, to make it safer for people to walk their dogs. But again, like to answer your question, you can take like I was just telling you with Lakota, you can take everything off your dog once they know what you want them to do well. But you're not focusing on the heel and the break. It sounds like he doesn't know what that is. So that's my point is, when you're out and you have a question of when can I start taking the equipment off, the only way you're ever going to get to that point is when you start teaching the dog what you want them to do on the leash. So if you're using the prong collar every now and then to kind of just pull the dog back when they drag you, that's not going to teach the dog how to walk nicely.
We're working on that. He does pretty good with the heel. Of course, the longer I go up on the walk, like halfway through the walk, I do have to do more pulling back. But since I am disabled and I have mobility issues, I try to walk as fast as I can because I know dogs normally walk faster than people. But then there's times where I have to slow down, like if I'm going down a hill or if I'm just getting too tired or my knee gives out on me or something. And that's where I have a little bit of a problem with him, is slowing down to my speed because he wants to go faster. So I also wanted to find out about every 4 or 5 minutes or so, I let him have a break.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fair? Is that what you would recommend do when you're expecting to heal? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. You should be able to I mean, realistically, again, like it's the same thing we're talking about with the barking outside or whatever. Whatever you say should go. I mean, you should just have control and, you know, a lot of dogs need that. And that's why we use some of the methods that we do with punishment and operant conditioning to make dog, like if you tell a dog to heal and they just don't, and they drag you down the road, it's like, you know, they're not going to be like, oh, sorry. Like they just don't care. You have to be able to snap them out of whatever they're in to teach them. So yeah. Okay, cool. Yep.
Hannah, do you have a question?
Two.
Can speak up.
Could
you see
him?
Hi. Yeah.
I just had two questions. One was when we're healing him. So we always make him sit by the door and then we go out first and then we call him to come out. It's like a safety feature for my mom, so he's not like yanking her out the door.
Mm-hmm.
But when we tell him to come, he goes full force. Like he like will just dash out of the door. And so I'm just wondering how we can start helping him to just nicely get up and walk out the door. It's like this dash he does real fast.
Yeah. I would, it's one thing I was going to recommend for you guys just in general is to work on your thresholds and make him really wait for your okay before he goes out of doorways. Because one thing that he's probably not getting enough of is mental stimulation. So it's good that you guys are getting him out and you're walking him and you're playing fetch and you're playing frisbee and all that stuff. But you want to make him think too, because all of that stuff is pretty mindless for dogs, right? You get a frisbee, you get to chuck it. I mean, I do it every day with my dog, but you also need to make him think too. So my point is I would put him on a leash and I would work on that threshold. Like when you tell him he can break through whatever barrier he's in, you would catch him at that threshold and make sure that you have the ability to give him a break. So when you're working with him and in any circumstance, you got to put that your leash is like your very beginner A, B, C, D, E, F, G type thing where you put the leash on the dog and you teach them what is appropriate, what's not, what's right, what's wrong. It's your whole communication. So I would recommend putting the leash back on and teaching him how to walk nicely through that one doorway that he's bolting out of.
Okay. And then my other question was when we're going places.
You want to just take the phone?
Yeah, I can hold it.
My arms get tired.
When we're going places and I strap him into, we have like this little seatbelt thing in the car. So when I get into the car and I go to strap it on his collar, he always rolls around. He always twists mm-hmm. his head. He like kind of like does like a back roll.
Mm-hmm.
Every single time that I have him get in the car on the seat and I try to go clip it on his collar, it's like this big ordeal. I'm wondering what I should.
Yeah,
I'm wondering what I should do about that behavior. When I would like if he could just get in and I could just go and clip the thing onto his collar, but he always does this weird like roll around.
Don't you tell him to lay down and stay?
Yeah, I tell him to go down, but he still like rolls. You've seen it. Like,
oh, while he's down,
while
he rolls.
He's down.
So
yeah,
you want him to just be still.
Yeah.
What happens if you just said still? Because he knows that command.
He doesn't usually listen to me.
Yeah, I would. Well, you'd have to troubleshoot a little bit on what's going to work. But instead of like when you get into a situation where you're asking a dog to like do something with a lot of, I don't want to say stress, but like a lot of pressure, where it's kind of like this anxious, like we're loading up to go somewhere. There's a lot going on. You know, we're getting ready to go. I think I would be careful about how much obedience that you give him. So if you ask him to down or you ask him to sit, like I would just get like treats, and I would take my hand and I would hold my hand. I'd put a couple of treats in there and I'd have him work the treats out as I'm clipping him up, so he's stationary. So instead of like trying to fight him and try to grab him and wrestle with him, because that's normal, I think, for dogs, is they're like, don't clip me, don't do this, don't do that. And I think if you can give him an alternative of, again, kind of like what we were talking about this whole time, is what do you want him to do? Well, I want him to just sit still enough where I can hook this thing onto him. And like you were saying, is if he doesn't do that for you, as much as we think like, oh, if I tell him to still, but again, like when we're using obedience or behaviors in realistic context, when we're saying, hey, I want you to do a sit or a down or a still in reality, and they don't do it, you might as well not even try to say it, because it's just not going to work. So just try to work smarter, not harder. I would get a thing of treats. I would load them up. I would do this and he'd be doing this. He'd be nibbling the treats out of your hand. And then you, because he's going to sit there and focus on those treats, and then you can clip him up. But what I would do is do this often. So don't just do it once a week, twice a week when you're doing it. I would teach him, and you could reinforce the still like behavior if you want, or the cue where you get him up, he puts his hand in there, you clip him, you wait 5 seconds, you unclip him and you break him out. And then you put him, I would put a leash on, put him in, get your treats. He eats the treats. You clip him, you hold there, good still, whatever you want to mark it. You kind of stand back and then you let him out, and then you do it again. And continuing to, same thing with the threshold that I was talking about. Like if he has a hard time bolting out of doorways or bolting towards people or whatever, don't just try to work on it that one time or that two times that you're doing it throughout the day. I would do it, like do it 10 times, like bring him out the door, bring him back in and do it again. Bring him out the door, bring him. Same thing I was telling your mom, like when you guys are working on that reactivity, when you get that long line and you get that prong collar on and you go outside, it would be Ruger come. And then if he didn't, you would give him a little bit of pressure. You'd give him a little pop. He'd come to you, you'd pay him, you'd give him a break. But these are things that you should be working on for like 10 minutes at a time throughout the day. So that way when you go and use it, he's already done it 50 times that week. And he's like, yeah, I know what to do. And then it's fair when you correct him, but don't just wait for that moment. Oh, he's barking, let's go out and hook him up. Like you want to practice all of this before it happens.
Okay.
You need both hands though to connect it, right? So what does he recommend if you need both
hands?
Yeah.
So when I go to clip on, I usually grab his collar and then I grab the thing that I'm clipping. So usually I have both hands holding something.
Why are you grabbing the collar?
Usually because of what he does with all his roll around, I grab the collar to keep him steady.
Right.
So
if you replace the, because if you grab him and then he's like, oh, okay, I'm gonna get out of this, like that's the problem. So if you replace that grab with some yummy whatever you want to use, his head will go boom right into your hand and he'll stabilize himself as he's eating things out of your hand. And and I would just hold it so he has to work it out. Like put food in your hand or kibble or treats or whatever, so he has to lick and chew and try to get it out. Don't just do this because it's going to take 2 seconds. It's going to be gone. I'd put it in your hand, make like kind of like this little thing, and then he's got to work it out. And that will replace you stabilizing him. Like you'd get in there, he'd be sniffing around. He's like, oh, what's this? You put your hand here. He goes, thump, and he puts his snout right there. You take your other hand, you clip his harness, and that would replace that.
True. Yeah. Yeah, I think those are the questions that I have.
Okay, cool.
Well, thank you so much, Tom. Of course, I could keep you for 4 hours, and yeah. I want to time. I did want to just ask you one after we get the long lead and that taken care of, and we work on the state, the commands, and the relationship. What would be the next step after I do that
I understand. So there's a couple things. I think you should be working on the recall. I think you should be working on your overall goal is for him not to bark at these things anyway. So to me, I would be toggling between many different things throughout the day. So if he's out on your long line, it would be Ruger come, he'd come to you, and then you would do your place and you're down in your stay. So you'd get like a little cot out there for him. They make them super cheap, $30 off Amazon. You can leave it outside. You'd say come, you'd say place, you'd say stay. And then that would remove him from the situation that is making him bark because there's kids or whatever on a bike that he can see. The other thing that I would be doing if I was out there is I'd be hanging out there with him. And when he barked, I'd say, leave it. And I'd correct him. And so your overall goal is to be able to, just like you did with the other things, it sounds like is once you correct him for barking, just because they're bikes and they're going by, and then when he stops barking, you would pay him. So that way he doesn't bark. And so you're teaching him that barking is bad and not barking actually gets him paid. So you're trying to reverse the role, but you're not going to be able to be successful with that if you don't really work him mentally throughout the day as well, because he's just going to get bored. And then the boredom is then going to lead to the reactivity, and the reactivity has nothing to do with the bikes or the skateboards or the harness or whatever you're dealing with. It's just because he's bored. So I think if you mentally work him on the things that I was just talking about with the thresholds and the sits and the stays and teaching him new stuff, he's going to be less likely to go and react. I would say that if you can spend an accumulative of an hour a day training him, he's going to be a happier dog. And I would opt out of maybe that physical exercise and work on mental exercise as much, because that's what's really probably causing at least 30% of this reactivity is boredom and frustration. So it would be accumulation of mental stimulation, because that's big in this equation. It's going to be your basic obedience, because right now we don't have good enough obedience to counter the behavior we don't like. So it'd be working on, okay, he's barking. What do you want? You don't have any, there's nothing, you got nothing. You're just reaching for thin air. Like, well, I want him to come, but he doesn't know come in this context. We haven't worked on it. I want him to down. Well, he doesn't, you got to work on those things. And then the other thing is just correcting him right now from my understanding is he hasn't been punished for this behavior ever because we haven't been able to time it. So I would go out with your regular 6-foot leash with your prong collar and your safety clip. And once he barks, Ruger, leave it, correction. If he stops barking, you pay him and you teach him. And then over time, your voice is what's making him come and down and stay and leaving it. Then what happens with the prong collar and everything else that we use is it enforces, right? So we're like, hey, if you don't listen, there's going to be punishment. And over time, he's going to, just like with kids, it's just like with people, it's just like with adults, with human behavior, we learn through operant conditioning. If we make a mistake, there's potentially going to be a consequence. And it doesn't matter if it's eating too many bananas or it's not running as much as you should or whatever it is, right? Or criminal activity. If there's not consequence, it's anarchy. And dogs need consequences. They need boundaries. They need structure. And right now, he's doing something that you don't like, but he hasn't been punished on time yet. So therefore, he's never really going to come out of that, this is what I want to do, until you do that.
Well, thank you so much, Tom, for your time. The question is, do you think he would ever be a candidate for coming up for a room and board?
Please, yeah. It would be lovely, because that's really what he needs, is he needs structure. And that's kind of what I was telling you in the beginning is this is a dog that would shape up really, really quickly, really, really nicely, given the right opportunity and environment. Right now, hey, I have a 2-year-old German Shepherd on a back tie with a bunch of things running around him and he's frustrated. And it's an equation that makes so much sense to me, and it would be pretty cool to see how much he would learn and grow from being in a different environment. And to be honest, this doesn't normally happen, but being in the kennel in our board and train environment would be less stressful for him than in the environment he's in currently. So I think that that would be a great idea in the future.
Okay, I'm going to start saving up for that and working on that. And I think it would be helpful for everybody. And then, yeah, I think that's cool. All. I could keep you forever. But that's not fair to you. Mm-hmm. I love your videos. I want to thank you for doing free videos on YouTube so people who are having a tough time can still learn. And I've done most of my training with him because of your videos. Just try to follow what you do.
I'm happy. I'm very happy for you. And I wish you the best of luck and just keep at it. And you know, you'll see a progress for sure.
Okay. Well, thank you, Tom. And you're welcome. I love him a lot. Really don't want to have to put them down. That would break my heart.
Yeah, give them to me before you put them down. I'll take them.
Okay, Tom. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Bye. All right, you guys, you've reached the end of the podcast, and I am going to be answering at least three of your dog training questions. If you want me to answer your dog training questions, all you have to do is head over to the iTunes review chart, leave a review, and leave your question. All right, this question comes from DCarp44. Love the podcast and YouTube videos. Hey, Tom, your approach to dog and people training really makes these challenging people are facing approachable. Other overcomplicated things, and your knack to keep it simple is truly effective. I have an 11-month-old Boykin Spaniel and have been working with the Tom Davis 280C the past 5 months. He's fixed and I've had him for about 8 weeks. I'm struggling with reliable recall. He is good with limited distractions, but I have a hard time regaining his focus once he's fixated on something. When is it appropriate to increase the stim levels when we are out on walks and hikes? He's conditioned response to a 4 inside with limited distractions, new places, or other dog big issues. It's tough to see where the increase is because sometimes he responds to a 7 or 8 and sometimes it needs to go up to the 20s. Well, first of all, thank you for the review. Second of all of this is covered in my course, and I'm not constantly trying to push my course. You guys, you just have to understand that I have answered so many of these questions so many times, and it's still really good questions and it's still very valuable for you guys, but just know that I created a course so I don't get burnt out and not want to talk about it anymore. So I would highly recommend looking into the course that I spent months on developing every single little piece of the remote collar training and how to do it, including this question. But when is it appropriate to increase the stim levels? It's when he's not listening and he knows the e-collar well. So when he's not responsive to your e-collar and he knows it well, that's when you go up. And again, this is a conversation that probably would normally take 45 minutes to really answer. But again, conveniently, I have made a very, 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 very in-depth, multi-layered dog training remote collar course just for you. So I would go and check that out. Thank you for the question. Thank you for the review. Cassidy Shoop, 5-star review. Hey, Tom, I followed you on Instagram for a while now and just recently recommended your podcast by a coworker. I work at an animal shelter and I've always been super interested in dog behavior, and I had some issues with my own dog who I was adopted when he was a puppy, or she. She's shown signs of resource guarding and animal aggression since she's 2 months old, so I have to assume some of the genetics, considering I have no idea where she came from. Here's one of the main questions I have for you. I have an American Bully Amstaff mix. She is 2 years old. She's fixed. She grew up around my cat and two other dogs. As she's gotten older, she's gotten more possessive over objects like food, toys, and our bed, not with people, but with other animals, especially with her cat. Whenever my cat jumps on our bed, Nova, the dog, is already laying on the bed and she growls if the cat gets close enough, and she will even go after the cat. She never made contact with her cat, but she has a couple times where I've woken up to Nova chasing my cat off the bed, lunging at her. Obviously, this is very dangerous considering the strength and size and differences between the cat and the dog. My main concern is I think my boyfriend and I may have accidentally made this problem worse. Our cat would walk by or jump on the bed and Nova would growl and we would correct Nova and tell her no. Same with her resource guarding food and toys. Now there are times when she jumps straight to going after her and trying to attack her whenever an animal gets near. I think by correcting her for growling, we have taught her that the appropriate corrections are not okay. So she jumps straight to the next attacking. Is this true? It could be true. I get this question all the time, and I think growling is definitely a very innate primal thing. My freaking elbow. I love your podcast and teaching. So I think the question is should we be correcting the growl? I think the growl again is like, I to me personally, with a very just mindful, smart dog, I think that she's just realized that she's just not going to growl. She's just going to go straight for the cat. It's not going to make necessarily the things better or worse. All it's going to do is it's going to expedite when she goes after the cat. So she's just not going to growl anymore. She's just going to go. So it doesn't change the, it. So the overall goal is the dog having a problem with the cat. So I think you're overlooking the real problem, because nothing would have changed. Rather she growls and then lunges, or she just lunges, that's the problem, is actually going after the cat. So I think you just have to really understand that, considering her with her age and whatever, things are getting more intense. And so you're just going to have to do the best you can to really monitor their behavior together, especially when they're obviously together. And I would just try to deter the cat away from these situations, because it is going to be dangerous. But I think overall, you also have to look at what you're putting your cat and your dog in. Because if your cat, which my cat does the same thing, jumps on the bed every night to like get attention and get love or whatever, and you're also bringing up the dog, and you know that this equation is going to happen every night, it's going to be easier for you to put the dog away, because the dog is trainable and the cat is not. Bear with me on that. You know what I mean? So that's what I would do, is I would say, hey, look, my dog doesn't like my cat anymore. My cat is going to jump up on this counter or this bed or this couch during these circumstances. So instead of setting both of them up for failure and causing a lot of stress, what I would do is put the dog in a situation where you're not going to have that. So I hope that that helps, but that's what I would do, because you know, it's a cat and mouse game that you're probably not going to get rid of, because it's a terrier wanting to do terrier stuff. And so I would just try to manage the situation a little bit better, because you know when these things are going to happen and you're allowing it to happen, and then these boom. So just like I talked about in a lot of my other podcasts, is if you can take away a variable and it's going to make everything 100% more successful, you should do it. I love the No Bed Dogs podcast and your realistic training advice. Sorry, let me back up. HLA93. I love the No Bed Dogs podcast and your realistic training advice. My question is it irresponsible to have a reactive dog on an e-collar? My dog is reactive towards other dogs. He is getting better at being non-reactive with the prong, and he goes on walks. I would love to have him on the e-collar, but, oh, okay. You mean, is it responsible to have a dog off leash that's reactive? I would use the leash in prong instance, but, okay, I got it. So yeah, you can have your dog off leash. But you just have to make sure that, again, like, you know, that your dog is potentially muzzled. If they're going to, there's a difference between reactivity and aggression. Like if your dog is attacking other dogs, then you probably need to definitely have your dog muzzled when they're off leash, because especially if you don't know where you're going to be at, and you have to keep your dog kind of close, because having your dog muzzled off leash is also a danger in itself. But I would love to have e-collar trained for times when we're out hiking in open fields. I worry having him off leash that there's going to be another dog. So I think, again, like you have to outweigh your options of, is your dog reactive or just aggressive? Because if your dog is barking at people and, like, you know, whatever, I mean, that's not a big deal. I think that that's normal. I think that those things are going to happen. I think what you should be working on is your obedience over everything. I think that that's the most important thing, is recalling the dog, making sure your recall is good. And that's what the e-collar does, is it gives you that off-leash responsibility and that off-leash freedom. And it gives you really just that reliability, right? And that backup plan, that just in case there is another dog or a squirrel or a chipmunk. So the answer is yes. If your dog is just reactive, worst case scenario is the other dogs get barked at. But more importantly, I think that your overall recall should be good anyway, and you should be putting him into environments that your dog is going to be successful in, and not going to a place where there's going to be a ton of dogs, right? But if you're hiking by yourself or your partner and you're out, and you have a big open field, e-collar is going to be awesome for 90% of everything that you're going to be dealing with. And then there's that 10% of reactivity that you could also be using it for recall and stuff like that. So you can definitely do it. But again, like you already know, having a reactive dog, you're going to be conscious and mindful of where you're bringing this dog and so on and so forth. So yeah, I think you can, no problem. Hope you guys are well. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you next Monday. Have a good night. Thanks again. If you want me to answer your questions, make sure you leave them in the review in the iTunes chart. Bye.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.